Campus Chronicles is the ultimate podcast for college students seeking real stories, honest advice, and empowering insights to thrive in student life and beyond. Hosted by Brooke Young and the Campus Chronicles team, this weekly show features inspiring interviews, practical tips, and conversations that tackle the challenges, wins, and personal growth that comes with university life. Perfect for college students, campus leaders, and young adults looking to make the most of their journey, one episode at a time. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, and join the community redefining what it means to thrive in university. Hello, hello, everyone. I am so excited to introduce you to this knowledgeable, wonderful guest that we have today. Her name is Natalie Kine from Nickel and Dimes. Natalie, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Brooke. I'm excited to have a conversation with you today.
I'm excited to have fun, but before we get into all of that fun, before we go there, I have to know, what's your Campus Chronicles story?
Oh, goodness. So my Campus Chronicles story is I wanted to take a gap year after high school. My parents were like, nope, you're still living at home. We want you to go to school. And so I did, with a goal of a psychology degree. I wanted to be able to help underserved kids and just help mold their lives, help them, you know, figure out their way through, I guess. Well, about a year and a half into it, I realized I did not want to do what I thought I wanted to do. And so I
imagine
was getting
that.
Yeah. And I was getting ready to get married. And so I actually stepped away from school for about 4 years and figured out a little bit of who I was and at least the direction I wanted to go. So I went back to school in my mid-20s, but working full-time, I was going to school at nights to finish my bachelor's degree. And I really wanted to be in corporate America. I wanted to be in a setting as a leader. I wanted to work with numbers. I'm passionate about numbers. So accounting and finance is the direction that I went. And I did community college my first 2 years. And then, like I said, I was going at night. So I finished my degree with the University of Phoenix. So my journey was what it was supposed to be for me. I truly believe that in every area of my life and over each decade I've survived. However, I would say my biggest lesson learned is if I could go back, I would not have taken that gap. I would have shifted where I was at to what I wanted to do, and I would have stuck it out even as a newlywed, even, you know, still figuring out a job around school. But that's really it for me. Nothing too exciting. I didn't have this crazy college experience, but I had my college experience. And so I would say it's okay to shift. It's okay to change in the middle if you decide, because let's be honest, those first 2 years are really the core classes for any degree. And so it's a great time to shift, but you don't have to stop to do that.
And there's no shame in shifting. There's no shame in realizing that you've changed, you've grown, and what you thought was right for you just isn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And
we have you on to discuss numbers. You say, I like numbers because nobody should take any accounting advice from me. They should take it from you instead. Like no one ever should.
I hear you. Hey, we each have our thing. We each have our specialty. And when we all come together to share information, that's what makes the difference, because people can learn from every single one of us. So
I want to dive in. Before we hit record, you were sharing an interesting story with me about your son and his financial journey. You're incredibly passionate about helping young people get on the right path financially. Let's discuss, why is that important to do it when you're young?
Because time is your best friend when it comes to your finances. I mean, that's the really short answer. But what I mean by that is the way that compound interest works is it grows over time. But you need years in the beginning to build up. And then, so for example, rule of 72, if you haven't heard of it called that, it's the math equation behind compound interest. So any interest rate you're earning, divide it into 72, that's how often your money's going to double. Okay, so let's say you put your money somewhere it's earning 10%, just for easy math. Your money's going to double every 7.2 years. The more years you have, the more doubles you get. But let's say you start with $10,000. Those first few doubles, yeah, they're going to grow your money and that's great, but it's not going to become a significant amount in that first 10, even 15 years. So the more time you have to get that to grow, the better chance you have to get into the $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. And then when that starts doubling, that's when you actually build real wealth and financial freedom.
So with your son, you said you sat down, you helped him look through, where is my money going? Because I know I've had that question before too. It seems so simple. Where is our money going? But it's not always as simple as we think. It can be very insidious, the places that we are spending our money. Let's talk budgeting. Let's talk why it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason it's so easy to not know where your money's going is because it disappears for $7, $10 at a time. And that is the thing I learned in my late 30s and going into my mid 40s, really trying to figure out where am I from a retirement perspective and where do I want to go? Meanwhile, my son is a senior in high school. When I started my personal finance business, I was in corporate America for 20 years before that doing corporate finance. And so shifting over to this, he was in his senior year. He was getting ready to go into the military. So as I was learning all of the components that go into personal finance and how to help people, my son was just stepping into that adult world. And so initially, I mean, he didn't have a lot of bills. He was just leaving home. He was going to be getting a steady paycheck in the military. And the one thing we set up for him was an account where he could build wealth long-term tax-free. And that's a bigger conversation, but that's the first thing we put in place. $129 a month. He'll retire with over $1 million in that account because he started at 18 and now he has the ability to touch it along the way if he needs to, but if he doesn't, a significant baseline to have when you're getting closer to retirement. However, here's the one thing I really missed is talking him through all those little mistakes I made. It's so easy to swipe the debit card, or let's be honest, even Apple Pay now, you don't even have to have a wallet with you anymore.
I learned about that 2 weeks ago. I didn't know Apple Pay existed until 2 weeks ago. I'm a little behind. I'm 100% serious. Yes.
Yes. And while it is incredibly convenient, that is also the downside of it if you're not careful, because it's so easy to not pay attention. And so with my son, he's now out of the military, living on his own, and reached out to me and he's like, Mom, I should have, you know, $800, $1,000 left every month after I pay my bills. I don't know where my money's going. And I immediately said, come on over this weekend and bring your detailed bank statement with you. And I'll
show you.
I really
like the look you got in your eye when you said that. You can tell this is her passion. This is her zone of genius.
It is, because I look back and realize, had I known this information in my 20s or 30s, mine and my son's lives both would have been different. And without going into all that detail, this is my chance to give him that opportunity because I know the information. I didn't then for myself, but I do now for him. And so I'm like, come over, bring your detailed bank statement, and we're going to go through it. And so we went line item by line item through his bank statement for July, and we plugged it all into a simple Excel worksheet that I built that creates a budget and categorizes all of your expense. So it took maybe 20 minutes or so to get everything put in there. And then all I did was turn the highlighter on my cursor on and I was like, boop, boop, boop. There's your $1,000 right there. Video games, gas station. Now buying gas sometimes, but that energy drink or that soda pop, fast food on his way to work or on his way home for work, the coffee shop, Amazon. That's the one thing when I'm even doing budgets with my clients, I say, do we have all your numbers? They say, yeah. I said, what about Amazon? And they're like, oh, and guess what?
Amazon's that hard one.
Yeah, but that's what happens. And so all of those stops are usually between $5 and $10. So you don't think much of it in the moment. And if you're not looking back at your actual numbers and tallying them up because you just think, I got $1,000 a month, I'm good. I can just keep swiping or scanning my Apple Pay or whatever. And then you go to your bank account and there's nothing there. but maybe you got a flat tire or you need an oil change or who knows what, you don't even have that $100. Mm-hmm. And so that's the practice we went through. And I showed him and I said, look, here's the thing. And I want you guys listening to this episode to understand, my goal is not to take your money away from you. My goal is to help you make better decisions with it. And that's what I said to my son. I'm not telling you not to spend any of that $1,000 on those things. I'm saying, what if you cut it in half? Because I said, you already know that account we started for you with $126 a month. If you cut that in half and put that $500, half of it into that account to grow it even more, and the other half in a bank, high yield bank account, savings account, to build an emergency fund for when those things come up, then you have choices. That's the difference. Having money in the right place gives you choices, because life is going to throw a lot of things at you that you don't have a choice about. And if you don't have to worry about the financial piece, it's a game changer. And so that's really it. It's looking at your numbers and being honest with yourself. Don't beat yourself up. It is what it is. You can't go get that $10, $12, $13 back, but you can identify what it is and then ask yourself, can I cut it in half? Mm-hmm. And then what can I do with that money to put myself in a better situation in the future?
When you said that about choices, that was so convicting. Now that struck me, because it's true. Yeah. There's a lot of propaganda. Money doesn't buy happiness. But to your point, money does buy the opportunity to say, I'm not happy in my career. I'm going to pivot. I'm not happy in my marriage. I'm going to make a different choice, whatever it might be down the line. Even in the short term, I'm not happy in the city that I am. I'm going to move.
Yep.
As far as propaganda, though, I want to discuss that for a minute. There's so much information, particularly about finance, on the internet for young people. You can go find it legitimately anywhere, and they are completely different perspectives. When we're consuming media and it's talking about these sorts of things, investing, saving, emergency funds, what do you look for to know it's credible?
Ooh, first of all,
I know that's a hard question.
It is a hard question because, and I'm on social media. I've got a TikTok account. I put videos with educational tidbits, and I go live sometimes and things like that to talk about finances. So people could look at my content and said, how do we know that we can trust the information she's telling us? Ask questions. If you watch, let's say somebody came across my videos, I'll speak specifically to myself, but you could apply it to anybody out there that you watch. If you were watching my videos, I would say, reach out to me and ask me, you know, how did you get where you are? Or how do I know that the products or the processes that you're talking about are the direction I should go? What I mean by that, or flat out ask if they're licensed. That'll answer it right there for you. So yes. For me, I have my life and health insurance license. So I am licensed and regulated by the insurance commission, both in the state of Texas and at the national level. Now I'm actually licensed in 22 states, but my home state is Texas. So I can't just willy-nilly throw advice and information out there because it could put my license in jeopardy. But it is okay for you to ask somebody for their credentials to give you a baseline for, I'm going to go further with this conversation or with this person, and then trust your gut in the process. If you're talking to somebody about your finances and something just like anything else in your life, if something doesn't feel right about it, if you're not connecting with that person, you are not obligated to continue moving forward with them. And the other thing I would say is when you pursue a conversation, are they leading with education? If you talk to somebody and they're trying to move you right to a financial product, too soon. And I would pivot. Not that that product may not be good for you, but if they're not giving you the understanding of the direction they're taking you or guiding you in, then how do you know to make decisions in the future? So for me, everything starts with financial education first. Then we look at where a person's at, find out where their gaps are, or I call them holes are in their financial boat. And then I show them options they can plug those holes with. But the decision isn't mine. I never tell a client what they should do. I give them options. I explain how they help them reach their goals based on the education I've provided. So that's what I would say. Look to see, are they giving you educational information? Are they teaching you about the conversation you're having? Or are they just trying to move you to a product? And number two, are they a licensed professional? Because that matters.
And are they curious about you? Are they genuinely asking you intentional questions to get to know who you are? Because the intentionality is something I want to talk about here. Being intentional with our finances to the point that you made about these $5, $10, $15, $12 purchases is so important, because it's not taking away from your joy or taking away from who you are, but being intentional about, does this actually bring me joy? Is this a choice I want to make, or is it a choice I make simply out of habit?
Yeah, exactly. And you made a point earlier. You said money doesn't buy you happiness. It doesn't. What money does is it gives you the ability to do the things that make you happy.
Right. And I love that.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I said this recently, I think on one of my social media videos, we have people that work 30, 40, 50 years and then step into retirement stressed about money. And that is not okay. In my opinion, especially in America, no, that should not be happening. And it's a lack of financial education. So the other thing was, you pointed out, are they curious about who you are? I said I lead with an education. My second appointment is what's called a financial needs analysis, where we're going to dig into what do you have coming in, what do you have going out, to identify those holes in your boat. But before we get to the numbers, the very first part of that appointment is, what are your goals, dreams, and priorities? And everything we do moving forward is based around that. So you're exactly right. Is the person trying to connect with you, understand you, and are they speaking to your future or what they think? And it's pretty easy to tell the difference. Like I said, trust your gut. If you feel a connection, if you feel like they care about what's important to you, then that's great. Keep moving in that direction. But if not, pivot, because there's a lot of amazing financial professionals out there that'll lead you in the right way.
Something we discussed before we hit record, and I wanted to shortly bring this up, is here in the States, at least, NIL, name, image, likeness, has become a really big conversation.
Yeah.
And for those that may not be familiar, it's obviously where young athletes can get endorsements and brand deals and then put money into their bank account or their pocket. The issue with this that has been widely reported since NIL has started is that these young people don't know how to manage their money. They don't know how to plan in the long term, and it's all short-term gratification.
Yeah.
You have worked with NIL. What have you seen?
I see exactly that. And it's not... Look, these kids, a lot of these kids, I should say, come from maybe underprivileged communities, maybe single parent households, who knows where from. And it doesn't matter what color your skin is or where you come from. The truth is, we are not given a financial education in our school system. And so I actually start working with athletes as much as possible when they're in high school, because now those high school kids can get multiple six-figure sponsorships. It's not just NIL, it's when they're younger. And so I start working with them, and I have a four-course financial education program that they have to go through to understand the base. So I dive deeper with these guys. I talk about credit, I talk about debt, I talk about your credit score, I talk about taxes, all of those things, because those are going to become very real for them very fast. So even more real than when you get out of college and you get that first job, because we're talking significant money. And so from there, we put a foundation. Like, you're not going to build a house on dirt. You're going to put a solid foundation down, and then you're going to build from there. So I work with them in high school based on where they're at, what's on the table, and their families are involved in this because, of course, they're not 18. To put a foundation in place they can build on. So when the money comes in the door, we've already talked about what their goals are and what financial vehicles exist to help them move towards those goals. And we've talked about putting some things in place that allow you to do some of the short-term stuff, but also planning long-term. Because whether it's 2 years, 10 years, or you're a Tom Brady that has an amazing football career, eventually that career on the field, on the court, whatever it is, comes to an end. So what's next? Having those financial resources so you can pursue that next passion, so you can retire the way you want, and so you can continue to give back to your family and your community is important. And that's really what a lot of these kids want to do. They want to take care of their families who take care of them. They want to give back to those communities. They want to start nonprofit organizations that help kids in all different areas. All of that can be done. It's just putting the right pieces in place from the beginning, but making sure that you do it in ways that you're protected as well. So when I work with somebody that's NIL, we're creating an LLC in their name, image, and likeness. Everything is built within that because it gives protection. Now that LLC is then put inside of a trust. And so all of the assets they build are protected with everything a trust gives you. So if they unfortunately make the dumb decision or have a difficult breakup, we'll say it that way, whatever that might be, from a financial perspective, they're protected where they can't just lose everything they've worked for in the blink of an eye. And there's a lot that goes into that, but that's really, again, same thing, starting with the education, looking at what's coming to the table, taking their goals and dreams into perspective, and then also giving them permission for some of that immediate gratification. I tell my athletes, I will never tell you no, but I may say not right now.
I love that.
And I'll build that plan between today and the yes. So if you want the... I have two athletes I worked with not long ago. One of them wanted some kind of, I'm not sure if it's Hermès or Gucci travel bag that was like thousands of dollars. The other one eventually wants a Bentley. And they're brothers. So both want expensive things, but one's a lot bigger than the other. I said, okay, then we'll build a plan to get you there. But you're not going to take that big deal you get to play in college and just buy that right off the bat. Because your college career, your professional career could end in the blink of an eye. You need to know that you have a foundation to stand on if that were to happen. But to me, it's also
important. What
does
a foundation look like for an everyday average student who may not be involved in this?
Yeah, absolutely. So that foundation, I like to use cash value life insurance, or it's called Index Universal Life. So it does, its slang name is the financial pocket knife because it does so many things. But at its core, it provides life insurance, God forbid something happen. It provides living benefits, which means your money, your death benefit of your life insurance becomes available while you're still living. If you are diagnosed with a chronic critical terminal illness, you experience a critical injury, something like that. So life insurance isn't just for when you die anymore. It's actually more for while you're living. Because if you have a savings, you've got this financial plan, you've been doing all this work, and then you run into a medical situation that costs a cancer diagnosis with extensive treatment and surgeries, it can drain everything you worked hard for. So those living benefits attached to that life insurance give you the ability to utilize that instead of draining what you worked hard to save for. So you're still on track to create that financial future that you want. Be able to retire on your terms. So it does those two things. But in addition to that, it is a way that you can save money tax-free because of how it's built. So your money grows tax-free. You have access to it along the way. So there's no 59 and a half rule like a Roth has, like a 401k has. So for example, if you're in college and you're like, this is my career path, I'm going to retire by the time I'm 50. You better have your money in a place you can get to it when you're 50. Because if it's in accounts with a 59 and a half rule, you're not only going to pay taxes, you're going to pay IRS penalties. And so putting it in a place like this, it gives them the foundation to save money? And what if they're buying their first house when they're 30 years old? If they've built enough money in there, they can borrow that from themselves for their down payment rather than borrowing it from a bank. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other nuances to how you use that and what you can build with it. But in my professional opinion, it is the best financial product that exists.
Wow. I have a hard question for you. Are you willing to answer it?
Yes.
Okay. I've loved all the insights you've shared. I want to know if you were going to give three pieces of advice to university age students regarding all the stuff we've discussed, financial advice in general. What would those three pieces of advice be?
My three pieces of advice, number one, no matter how much money you have coming in, even if it's from student loans or grants, or your parents were saved and are putting you through college and you just get a little bit of a stipend from them for your expenses or extracurriculars, create a budget. Even if it's $200 a month, create a budget so that you know where your money's going. Number two, build your credit, but do it smart. My parents told me, balance your checkbook and don't get credit cards. That's all they knew to tell me. And so what did I do? I did not balance my checkbook and I got credit cards. So at 25 years old, I was digging out of my first hole of debt. Granted, I didn't make a lot of money. So it was, I don't know, maybe $6,000, but it was a lot to me then. If you can learn how to build your credit with a small credit card that you pay off every month, it's going to put you in a position to get better financing on that car when you buy it. And doing really well managing your budget and paying your car payment on time is going to set you up to get the best situation when you're ready to buy the house. So I don't tell people to stay away from credit cards. I tell them to learn how to use them smart. Get one, keep the balance small. Teach yourself patience when it comes to the things you want. Don't get the $5,000 credit card and then buy everything you want. If you're putting it on a credit card, you can't afford it unless you can turn around and pay that credit card off at the end of the month. So that's how you build your credit. So if it's $300, put your groceries and your gas on it and pay it off at the end of the month. So you're using a credit card as a tool instead of it using you to create debt. And then my third one,
instead of it using you, that's beautiful.
Thank you. And my third one would be start that foundational plan for the long term. And believe it or not, you can do that in college. I mentioned that plan I put in place for my son, $126 a month. He could have started that plan at $38 a month, and that covers the cost of the life insurance and would still build up cash value. Now, it's not going to build as fast as it does by adding almost another $100 to it, but you put it in place. That kind of plan is never going to be less expensive. The cost of insurance goes up every year we live. So the longer you wait to put something like that in place, the more expensive it gets, even if it's only a few dollars. So that would be it. Create a budget, learn to control credit, not let it control you. And then number three, put that foundational product in place. Even if you're starting small, I promise your future self will be so grateful you did.
This is excellent. See, this is exactly why I had you come on to talk numbers versus letting me talk numbers, because I don't have any of this insight. I'm a word person by nature, but that's why we had to have you on, Natalie, and you have not disappointed.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming on. So if somebody wants to learn more, they want to listen to your podcast and become engaged with your content, where do they go?
If they want to listen to my podcast, they can find it on Apple or on Spotify. It's under Nickels and Dimes, or you can probably search it even by my name, Natalie Keim. And the best place to follow me on, well, if you're a TikToker, you can find me on TikTok. I'm under The Financial Caretaker. On Instagram, I'm under Natalie McPhee Keim. So either one of those places, and I cross post a lot of my content because I reach two different audiences there, but you can find me in either one of those places.
Natalie, I want to say thank you so much for sharing your energy and your wisdom and your knowledge and your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. And thank you so much to joining us, everyone, on another episode of the Campus Chronicles podcast.
So if today's episode gave you life, perspective, or just a much needed moment to breathe in a busy world, I don't want you to keep it to yourself. Share it, tag us, please send it to a friend who needs to hear it. And if you're not on our newsletter yet, what are you doing? Go to campuschroniclespod.com and join the crew. We have all the behind the scenes things, unfiltered thoughts from me and the team, bonus resources, and insider only invites to events, giveaways, and things that we really don't post anywhere else. I promise I'm not going to spam you. It's just the good stuff straight to your inbox. Being in university is wild enough. You don't need to miss out on what matters. Sign up now and let's make this next semester the one that you stop surviving and start thriving. Until next time, stay bold, stay curious, keep writing your own chapter. This is Campus Chronicles.